I have directed Secretary Connally to suspend temporarily the convertibility of the dollar into gold or other reserve assets.
Where is the gold?
This is the Gold News Hour podcast. Fergus Hodgson, your host. Thanks for tuning in. If you want more mining, precious metals, economic freedom, please do hit that subscribe button. And today we have one of my very best friends on the show and also a repeat guest, I mean, because I've enjoyed his presence. He is Adam Dubovi, or Dubov, based in Buenos Aires, Argentina. And he's a longtime journalist and financial researcher. His own firm is Ichimoku Fibonacci, ichimokufibonacci.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at DubDam. Okay. We'll include all these links in the show notes, so please go to goldnews.com/podcast if you want more details. Now, Adam, welcome, mate. There's been a lot of action, and I can share with us, with the viewers, that we got to catch up in Buenos Aires just, I'm thinking, a month and a half ago. Time flies. And so, as I was there in Argentina, this whole FTX scandal started to unravel. And as a man who is not entirely, but very heavily focused on cryptocurrencies, especially Bitcoin, there are going to be some outcomes. So do you want to touch upon why you think this scandal took place and why, after more than a decade of cryptocurrencies or Bitcoin use, where you're still seeing these major collapses?
Hi, Fergus. Happy to be here again. Your question is actually interesting because it stems from a confusion between what people think about what are Bitcoin main features, that is trustless money, is censorship resistant, and what are the companies surrounding Bitcoin and the crypto environment and all these altcoins. There are a lot of companies catering to people that want to get access by providing them different kinds of services, such as trading exchanges or custodians or loans and interest payment services for crypto users. But behind these companies is the same people that run like traditional financial institutions. So there is people does not difference what is an immutable trustless protocol like Bitcoin and the companies that cater services and that interact with different blockchains. So that's what was one of the main confusions of what we have seen in the headlines saying. So cryptos now is the same as financial, as the traditional financial system, because look what it happens. But that's not crypto, that's not Bitcoin. Those are financial companies catering to a specific sector.
Now, I agree with you entirely, Adam, that there is a distinction here between the actual cryptocurrencies, especially Bitcoin, and I know you're a little bit of a maximalist, and then the companies that are participating in the space. And in the case of FTX, they had a value proposition. They wanted to offer all sorts of ways of holding and using cryptocurrencies. And maybe their company could have grown if they'd not been so imprudent or irresponsible with client assets. Now, so are you basically saying then that this failure is really just in line with many other failures in the financial sector? I mean, from Bernie Madoff and all of the various Ponzi schemes. And we shouldn't tie that to cryptocurrencies?
Well, I'd say your assessment is right, but I'd rather say that in the cryptocurrency space, there is a lot of scams as well, that they call themselves a cryptocurrency. And a lot of, say this is like not very clear information about what's going on and what are the...
Inefficient markets.
Yes, yeah, so fraud. I would say fraudulent information more inefficient. Like, there is a lot of fraud going on in this space, particularly among a lot of cryptocurrencies. But I think they were basically a casino disguised as a trading exchange. They would provide anyone, any kind of instrument, and they would
have this own token, because remember all the root of this problem was in the FTT token that the exchange issued, as if they were their own Federal Reserve issuing their own money and using that token, an illiquid token with a fictional value because it was all wash trading, as a collateral to get more money to get loans. So it was a worthless collateral. So you know when all this started with the falling price of the token. So I can see a lot of parallels between what happened in cases such like you mentioned like Madoff or what happened in the financial crisis in 2008 with what happened with FTX.
Right, that's my observation too, and I did an interview with NTD Television when this first happened. I said this is not exactly a new experience for humans, especially in the financial sector. Prior to cryptocurrencies, we saw these collapses. Now, just a bit of an update for people who are listening, or just a clarification: the crash to FTX took place in November over about 10 days. And then in December, late December, we saw the extradition of Sam Bankman-Fried, the founder and not exactly charismatic leader, in my opinion, to the United States from the Bahamas. And so now the whole situation with this firm is getting very ugly and messy, and probably different members or participants are going to be testifying against each other. So I'm particularly curious about how people interpret this event and what the implications will be from a regulatory standpoint. So your concern is that people are basically seeing this as a cryptocurrency problem and especially a Bitcoin problem, when really there's a confusion there, because you're a bit of a maximalist and a lot of these altcoins are, I tend to agree, just worthless. So what then will happen in the regulatory space? Are we seeing some kind of ramping up, or just are politicians just too confused and really unable to address cryptocurrencies anyway?
Well, I think people will react like with a lot of discouragement towards Bitcoin, particularly because they had this bad experience with FTX, with crypto. But I think they should take that as a lesson. And I think all Bitcoiners learned the hard way about Bitcoin features, such as like, whether you lost your keys and you lost your Bitcoin, or you got hacked because you trust in someone who told you that he would get you rich quick, or you bought any like a portfolio of altcoins or some kind of that stuff, and then you learned it that way. But regarding, of course, because a lot of people has been a victim of FTX and Sam Bankman, and a lot of people is complaining and claiming for a solution for their problems, this will spark like a regulatory attempt to regulate the space and the industry, as it happened with every single like event that shakes a little bit the foundations of anything, and the government will always take an advantage to make these new regulations to have more control on it. Always in the name of protecting the recent victims, whether it's 9/11 victims, financial crisis, 2008 financial crisis victim, whether it's whatever crisis they have victims to protect, they will use that as an excuse to promote new regulation that, in the end, they won't do anything to protect the final user, but it will create the false sense, the illusion of security and being protected by someone from fraud. Or for any kind of criminal activity.
Yeah, one thing it definitely will do is create higher barriers to entry and higher costs for consumers or clients, users. Now, do you think though that the basic idea behind FTX, not its own, let's say, in-house coin that was fake collateral, but the idea of all sorts of derivatives associated with cryptocurrencies will become, let's say, a more established operation in the future?
Well, I think they will eventually be, There is right now a bill in the U.S. Congress by the Republican Senator Cynthia Lummis and a Democrat, Ron Wyden, and they have presented a bill to create to treat a kind of a group of assets as commodities, group of crypto assets as commodities, following all the CFTC regulations and guidelines to protect them from being regulated in a worse way, such as being under the supervision of the SEC or creating, a new agency to oversee crypto assets that could well happen. But so there is going to be a lot of competition in the regulatory aspect, and we'll have like more positive propositions, more anti Bitcoin, anti crypto prop bills. But in the end, you know, if you want to use Bitcoin, you don't need all this kind of regulation. You got to have the most regulated asset in the world. If you hold your keys, it's regulated by math and by code. So I think it's a much better alternative than relying on what Congress would say.
The Gold Newsletter is proudly sponsored by Inventa Capital Corporation, a venture capital advisory firm dedicated to the acquisition and development of assets in the natural resource sector. Today, Inventa is one of the premier mining groups with a first-rate portfolio of companies and a world-class team.
Yeah, well, right now, as you say, it really isn't clear what the exact nature of cryptocurrency regulation will be, both in the United States and abroad. It's a moving entity. And one particular or curly, awkward piece of the puzzle is that the Sam Bankman-Fried, this FTX company, they very swiftly tried to engage in what appears to be regulatory capture. Do you want to clarify how much of an impact will these insane donations from this man and this company have on shaping the regulation? With many politicians having egg on their face, are they going to be reluctant to get involved or more inclined?
Yes, that's a whole other aspect of this story, that is the political aspect. And before moving to his political donations, I like to remember that all these FTX problems started when Binance CEO ZZ, he was complaining that the CEO of another broker, another exchange, being FTX, this exchange, was lobbying in DC to put Binance out of the US market.
Oh, wow.
So that was what really angered ZZ about FTX. So then he tweeted about that he saw something that he didn't like in the FTX books, and because of the lessons he learned with the Terra Luna fallout last May, he's starting to sell FTT. So there was a political quarrel behind all these things that started in November, and yes, Sam was the third, I think, the third largest donor or second largest donor, political donor, in the mid-cycle election, in the legislative elections in the U.S., he donated, I don't know how many billions of dollars.
I think it was over $30 million. It was something insane.
Yeah, I even more, I think, between $50 million maybe. And he tried. Then he said that he also donated to the Democratic Party, but those donations were dark, which can't be proved. But it's possible, because I mean, these kind of people, they donate, they do all this kind of political show in order to get a friendly regulators and to have some kind of advantage against their competitors, like building a walled garden with the walls made to the measure of people like Sam Bankman. So, but I think that's the nature of politics. And why it would have been different in this industry than in any other industry, as we were talking before. I mean, healthcare has its own lobbyists, like traditional finance has its own lobbyists, constructors, they have their own lobbyists. Crypto exchanges, yeah, will have their own lobbyists.
Yeah, exactly. It's not as if regulatory capture is hardly a new phenomenon. I mean, it's as old as there are governments and industries. And in this case, though, maybe because cryptocurrencies are new and very exciting, dramatic, that it added a media flavor to it. And also, I find this just still hard to process how many supposedly intelligent investors or major pensions like the Toronto, or there was the Ontario Teachers Union invested in this. These major pensions dropped cash into the FTX boondoggle. And I think to myself, why did so many people, and this is where thinking that you're going to have just accredited investors, of course all these investors were accredited, that's going to fix the problem. This example is a great counterexample to that notion that accreditation is the solution. So why do you think so many supposedly sophisticated or professional investors got in on this problem?
That's a good question, because we've seen like very big names like, you know, Kevin O'Leary, Tom Brady, even Larry.
I don't know whether Tom Brady is a good example. He's a footballer, but
but I know this guy should have been like advised by someone about his business deals and about.
You would think so. You would think he would have the resources to get some good advice. Yeah,
top advisors in the US, but I think that's, I don't know, human nature. That's human nature, and how when there is a bubble going on, and you see there is the kind of too good to be true kind of things. But at the moment, people like champion it, and they say, "Oh, this is the latest big thing. I don't want to be left behind. I want to be on board of this." And then in retrospective, it was easy to see it, because now we know it. But when you have someone that moves also in that kind of environment, like say going to New York Times meetings and conferences and going to fancy cocktails, and they make their networks and connections there, and they make their businesses, and they close business deals with privileged information, or meeting government officials in these kind of meetings or intellectuals that put power a certain line in the newspapers, they will fall for these kind of scams. See Bernie Madoff. He was the president of NASDAQ, and he like scammed billions of dollars to a lot of wealthy organizations, wealthy people that you should have thought, hey, it's paying like, I don't know what was like 9-10% a year. I don't know what was he promising. You'd say, hey man, if he's promising you a fixed return, like there's like an immediate yellow light or a red light, I'd say.
Red light. Yeah. And it's funny too, because I remember the Madoff scandal, which was about 20 years ago now. I'm trying to remember exactly when. And one of my finance professors back in New Zealand was even an investor with Madoff. And I was thinking, so even this guy with a PhD in finance has been sucked into this. It's really incredible. Now, you made an interesting point about the Binance connection or ingredient in the downfall of FTX. I'm not so familiar with that part of the story. Do you want to clarify what Binance does? And I've heard that they're also on the ropes. Do you want to address their own challenges? Yeah.
Yeah, so I haven't been following the Binance case particularly, but after FTX fell, there was a lot of doubts over exchanges if they were holding the assets of their customers. So Binance, being the largest one with billions of dollars in their accounts, but from their customers, they started like the publishing what is called a proof of reserves, which is should be a document that proves that Binance has this kind of the money that they say they have. So the liabilities and the assets are equal. So Binance published this, which was a very sketchy document, because it didn't have any. It was like a document signed by a notary or a lawyer, and that was all. So they started raising doubts about Binance solvency and Binance liquidity. For the time being, there hasn't been a run or anything on Binance. Yes, let's say there's been a run. A lot of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrency were withdrawn from Binance, but so far they have met all their obligations. So although there were doubts, Binance at the moment seems fine. But you never know in this industry. And tomorrow we can get a news that there was like a $20 billion hole in Binance accounts, and that would be totally plausible and possible.
So Binance has withstood the initial run, so it had sufficient reserves at least to handle that. And whether it has 100% reserves seems unlikely, but you know, unless you actually really are inside the company, it's hard to know. Now, so yeah, a lot of let's say prominent people got suckered in by this, and your basic conclusion is don't rely on exchanges have cold storage of your Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think cold storage, having your own device which is not connected to the internet, that's the best way to hold your Bitcoin, and not having to trust with all of these guys. They are the same. These guys, Sam Bankman, CZ, and all these CEOs of exchanges, they could well be the CEO of a traditional finance company. They are not a traditional finance company CEO just because that's not their job right now. But it could have been like their next job, or it could have been their previous job.
Yeah. And so Binance, how are they different from the likes of Coinbase, which is a simple, let's say, exchange, but doesn't engage in lending, as far as I know?
I'm not sure about what Coinbase services, or if Coinbase includes lending or not. They probably do something like that. They have expanded into a lot of into a lot of niches within the crypto industry. Coinbase could well have the same problem. The advantage for our Coinbase customers is that they are a public company, so they have another kind of regulation. But I don't think that, even because they are a public company, when you can have 100% certainty that no one can take your asset, such as is the case of Bitcoin, why would you use a third party to hold your Bitcoin, which is not yours according to Bitcoin network, and it's probably not yours legally because it says that all the funds are like they don't have any privilege in the case of a bankruptcy process. So I'd say Coinbase has some other another kind of overseeing of oversight by regulatory authorities, but that does not prevent a crisis like this from happening.
But as you said, it's correct that Coinbase, of all these firms, has a lot of scrutiny. Coinbase is the big player here in the United States, and they are publicly listed. You can buy a portion of them, but they have taken a big whack over the last year and have been laying off many, many people. So even the big dog in the market, which has, let's say, a lot of regulatory, it's crossed a lot of regulatory barriers to get achieve its position, is struggling. Now, I still remember, I guess it was about a year ago now, when there was the broader cryptocurrency or altcoin collapse, and many, many people were getting involved in speculation with altcoins, and that just came to nothing, basically, or there were a lot of people got hurt, got embarrassed there. Do you think the 2022 experience with the altcoin collapse and with FTX collapse is going to change how people perceive alternative currencies? And will they look more to, I mean, if there is, I know there are attempts at this, but some sort of cryptocurrency or digital currency items, tokens, that are actually backed by something?
Well, I say that there is always new public to sell these kind of things. There is new people getting into the sector. And I think myself, I went through this kind of process of thinking that this token was going to be the next Bitcoin because it's faster, or this is the token for dentists or for plumbers, or there is a token that would allow you to do smart contracts depending on the weather and this kind of promises. But in the end, you understand the value proposition of Bitcoin if you stop 5 minutes and think about it. Maybe it takes a bit more than 5 minutes, but you have to be interested in understanding what's the real value behind Bitcoin rather than being flashed by all these colorful tokens with a very friendly community saying, GM fam, how are you? Like in Twitter every single morning. And this is attractive this always attracts people. People will still be attracted. But I think that in 2022, we have seen a lot of new Bitcoiners emerge after all this happened. People that finally had their aha moment, realizing that Bitcoin is different than all of that other.
Yeah.
Coins.
Well, I'm still trying to process what the outcome will be from these two major occurrences in 2022. And it doesn't appear that digital currencies backed by physical commodities are seeing some kind of renaissance or some kind of growth, because the cost of storage is problematic. And then also transportation, right? So this is where I guess we'll see. Now, one area that you focus on or address, if you're willing to speak about it publicly, is how people can transport their wealth across borders and maybe avoid capital controls or capital taxes on capital movements. Is this the sort of the leading use case for cryptocurrencies now?
I think that's one of the main use cases. I would agree with you. People like we saw people fleeing from Ukraine last year when the war began with a hardware wallet in their pockets, while there was people trying to get into the banks and the ATMs that were closed for that week, so they couldn't get their money out. I've seen a lot of friends moving from Argentina, immigrating from here, looking for a better future, maybe in Europe, in the States, with all their life savings in their pocket, using a hard wallet. They don't even use Bitcoin. Maybe sometimes they will use a stable coin, like you said, a physically backed token, like a US dollar stable coin, so they don't get any volatility in their trip. That's one of the main use cases I've seen. There is also a lot of people transacting and sending Bitcoin to, and this time particularly Bitcoin because of its censorship resistant feature, to activists in Africa, organizations in Afghanistan, for example, that teach women to code, which is illegal in Afghanistan. So they will get paid with Bitcoin. Sent from abroad to pay these Afghani women. So there is a lot of cases like this that are being used to, you know, skirt all the barriers that exclude people from transacting voluntarily between each other.
Voluntarily, yeah. And is the battle still on between central bank digital currencies and cryptocurrencies? I mean, I see that as one of the driving forces behind governments trying to impede the growth of alternative currencies, that they just don't want to lose their monopoly. How is this conflict or showdown shaping up?
Oh yes, there is a lot of going on with the CBDCs, not particularly in the United States, but abroad. There is a lot of, in China, but also in Canada, in some African countries, there is already a CBDC working. But I wouldn't frame it as an enemy of the cryptocurrencies, but as an enemy of human liberty in general. And all the problems that we will have with CBDC, such as having a lot of less financial privacy, having maybe programmable money that could, I don't know, you could spend, you could have a quota of buying meat because of the CO2 emissions of cows. So you can't buy more than 2 kilos per month of meat. Because you use CBDC, you can get tracked, but like this. And I see Bitcoin as a life saving raft in a ship that or an emergency exit that will allow you to exit this CBDC system, which eventually will be because money will go digital. Like I think that's not debatable. Whether it's CBDCs, whether
it seems Bitcoin, like it seems like an unstoppable trend. Yes,
that's unstoppable. I think we used metals in the Iron Age. Then we moved to when we discover agriculture, we use cows as money. So now we have a digital era. We're going to use digital money eventually in the next 50, 100, 200 years. I don't know, maybe less, maybe more. But that's a trend. That's a clear trend, and that's undeniable. So the election is between using money for slaves, issued by the government, controlled by the government, tracked by the government, or money for free people.
Yeah,
and that we say is Bitcoin, because all the other kind of money will be related to the slave money, not the money for free people.
Yeah, it is. I mean, slave or peasant, people who are subject to a totalitarian control mechanism. Because as you say, the big challenge with central bank digital currencies or CBDCs is that they give incredible surveillance and control capacities, and central banks would expand their mandates tremendously. My hope, and maybe this is happening, I'm not sure, but the central banks will die by 1,000 cuts. That there'll be just different uses of for transactions in all different ways, right? So we're sort of unraveling the different ways people trade with each other. And that's a wonderful thing. There can be a diversity of options. So in many ways, we're entering a new era, which I hope is not dependent on the US dollar or any national currency, but rather has a plethora of different options to fit to your case. And do you want to give us an update on the Lightning Network or alternative ways to make transactions that are quicker or get around the challenges associated with Bitcoin?
Okay. Let me add a final comment to what you said before, which is like it's right, because we're going to see first CBDCs, what is called a wholesale CBDC, which we use between banks and between central banks to settle payments. So not all CBDC projects are geared towards like final use for regular people. Some of them will be targeted towards used by banks, but I think that will be like experimentation, but in the end we are going to end up using CBDC. Fortunately, we have networks such as the Lightning Network, that is a layer 2 of the Bitcoin network that allows you, as I think we discussed this last time I was here, it was a faster and less costlier way to make Bitcoin transactions.
But is it actually working? Is this actually happening?
It's been working for the last 4 years now. There is a lot of developments going on the Lightning Network, a lot of companies that are developing products to use to use it easier, because I have to admit that it's not very easy to use if you want to set up your own Lightning channels and a lot of technical jargon that comes with it. It's not the most user-friendly thing right now, but I think that we've been seeing like how it has evolved over the years. And now we have a lot of different applications of Lightning Network, such as using it in payment gateways, using it with casinos if you want to, using it for micropayments, for donations, for a lot of different kind of use cases that money has, and a lot of applications have been developed. So there is just nothing, I can't remember none of anything special. There's been like the Lightning addresses where you can receive money, just providing an email address like address to a third person, and they can send you Bitcoin there through the Lightning Network. But yes, I think that's going to be one of the main that's one of the main competitors of CBDCs. So if we can see Bitcoin or the Bitcoin network and the blockchain as the settlement layer of the Bitcoin network, and Lightning Network is a payments layer. So it's like you send, it's like the Fedwire system and the Swift system and how all these systems interact in layers, institutional finance system. Well, all these kind of networks develop the same way in layers, layer by layer.
So this is my conclusion to some degree, that we're going to look back at this FTX scandal as really just a bump in the road regarding the broader movement or transition of currencies. So, folks, if you want to learn more from Adam, he does lots of his own research and has his own newsletter. Go to ichimokofibonacci.com. That's ichimokufibonacci.com. We'll also have that at the show notes. And simpler on Twitter is just at dubdam, dubdam. Gosh, Adam, mate, it's great to see you. Great to catch up. You know, it's an exciting time we live in. I look forward to next time. Okay, mate?
Great to be here, Ferg. Thanks for the invitation.